Welcome, virtual entrepreneurs, millennials on the go, and adventure seekers with big dreams. You found the right place. My name is Alexis Teichmiller, a millennial, lifestyle blogger, and digital creative. The Laptop Lifestyle is designed to inspire, educate, and challenge you to live the life you want every day. Together, let's unlock how to live the laptop lifestyle to the fullest. Hello, hello, Laptop Lifestylers. It is Alexis Teichmiller here, and I am crazy pumped to bring today's guest to you. Her name is Ellen Bennett, and for those of you who don't know who that is, she is the founder and creator of Headley and Bennett, the Los Angeles-based apron company founded in 2012, whenever she was just 24. So after culinary school and while working as a line cook at two Los Angeles restaurants, Ellen noticed the stale look and poor quality of the aprons that she wore daily, which then inspired her to make a more functional apron. Therefore, she created Headley and Bennett. Soon, attention came from press like New York Times and celebrity chef fans like Martha Stewart and Mario Batali, solidifying her as a real player in the restaurant game. Ellen grew her operation from a 400-square-foot office space to the showroom office space and 14,000-square-foot factory she currently resides in downtown LA, all in under just 3 years. The company has quickly expanded, and now her aprons can be found in more than 3,000 restaurants worldwide. Upon realizing aprons were only just for chefs, but for any maker who wanted a professional-grade apron to protect them while they work, she developed aprons for gardeners and potters so they too could have a garment as beautiful as the clothes they wore underneath. Since then, Ellen has collaborated with SpaceX, Google, Lexus, Delta, Four Seasons, Food & Wine, and thousands of others to craft functional aprons for their specific needs. In this episode, you will hear the behind-the-scenes story of how Ellen started Headley & Bennett, how to believe in yourself, and how to create a positive company culture as you are growing so quickly. I'm so excited to have Ellen on the show today because not only is she a girl boss, but I am incredibly inspired by her will to create a company that is centered around creativity. Hey, Ellen, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm so good. Thanks for having me today.
You're so welcome. I want to share with everyone kind of how we met. We actually met at a brunch that you were hosting with Jenny
Bennett Ice Brunches.
Yeah. Headley and Bennett Brunches. Yeah, that was so much fun in Nashville, and kind of got a chance to learn more about you and your company. And I would love for you to share how you got started with Headley and Bennett.
Yeah, definitely. I started it 4.5 years ago out of my house while I was a line cook at a really fancy restaurant in Los Angeles. And what Headley and Bennett is basically a chefware company. And we are apron designers, and we've now evolved into workwear. So think about all things that a kitchen staff would wear, we make it. And before Headley and Bennett existed, it was sort of this ridiculous, untapped world where everything was from like 1982 and nobody had updated anything. And the only quote unquote cool things that existed were like giant hot chili pants that were absurd and ginormous shirts that you wore that everyone felt like they were wearing giant bags and nobody looked good. There was no sense of uniform that you could, you know, hold your head proudly and say, I am a chef or I am a line cook and I look and feel awesome. Like, that was very much not the case. And I recognized that while I myself was, you know, making $10 an hour, getting my ass handed to me every day at this restaurant. And I was like, why the hell does everyone look so bad and feel so bad too? And I felt like I needed to change that for myself and for the people around me. So I set out to disrupt that industry and make it way better than it is, than it was. And now, yeah, I feel like we are definitely on our way to accomplishing that on a global scale.
Yeah, you are, girl. So you saw a gap in the market, really.
Totally.
Is you're like, hey, yes, this is there is an extreme correlation between how someone looks and feels, and you are noticing that in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And you're like, hey, everyone is wearing gray baggy clothing. Let's spruce this up a little bit.
Totally. And it's, you know, if you look at like Patagonia, when he started, it was similar to why he started. Everything that they sold were just like giant gray sweatpants to go mountain climbing. And he was like, mm-hmm. wait, why don't you do colorful stuff? Why don't you do this and do that? And in the same way, I've turned Hedley and Bennett into not only is it my business, but it's also this way that I can impact the world and be a part of change around me. And everything that I do with Hedley and Bennett, I'm always like, how can I incorporate this into helping make the world a better place? And I don't mean that frivolously or like, oh, I love that idea, but I actually sincerely mean it. And everything from how I hire our employees to are their goals aligned with our goals so that they're actually happier and so they do a better job, and the way that we cultivate the events at the factory, like everything we do has to do with the bigger impact that we have on the world, because I don't think that business is just about doing business anymore. The truth is everybody wants to love the companies that they're giving money to. It's not just like, great, I hate you, AT&T, but I'm going to use you because that's who supplies my cell phone service. Like, that sucks. And that's so outdated. Yeah. And we have so much of the world at our disposal that the consumer is sort of way more in the driver's seat than they used to be, which is kind of badass. And I want to make sure that the consumer that's buying from us isn't just like, I'm a consumer, but is like, holy shit, I love Hedley and Bennett. I'm going to fucking wear them every day because they make me feel amazing. They're an amazing company. There's real people behind them that give a shit about me and how I feel and how I look and are part of this whole bigger world. And that's my very like simple approach to business.
Well, because there's an emotional connection then.
Sure.
And you actually feel, whether you're purchasing Hedley and Bennett or you work for them, you feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
There's a sense of, you know, giving back or a sense of a bigger purpose. And I kind of want to dig into how you got started. So you had this idea, and then what? You went and found suppliers for fabric. How did you get your aprons to be used, you know, by top chefs?
Well, I started with one order, and this was from a chef that said, you know, do you want to get in on this apron order that I'm having somebody else make for me? And I was like, chef, I have an apron company. And he's like, what are you talking about? You're a line cook in my kitchen. And I was like, no, you don't understand. I started an apron company 2 weeks ago. I'll do that apron order for you. And he was like, what? And I convinced him to drop this other girl who I don't know who she is, but she's out there somewhere in the world. And sorry, lady. And he gave me the order. And so that was square one. I didn't really have anything in place of any kind. I just sort of faked it and, you know, did that night of service and then clocked out and ran the hell out of there and started calling everybody and their mother that I knew because I had a client and I couldn't let him down because he also was my chef. So I needed to make sure that I fulfilled it or else I was out of a job and out of a client's order. And that was really how it started. And I feel like in many cases, sometimes people are like, I have to have every single duck lined up and every single business plan and all the things lined up so that I can do this. And I did it totally the opposite. I was just like, oh my God, this is an opportunity. Take the opportunity, figure it out, trust yourself that you're going to be able to do it and go. And I did. And then I made it happen. And you know what? Those aprons were terrible. They were so ugly and we didn't even make them that great because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But I started, and that was really, I think, the best part about it. I just began and I didn't overthink it too much. And then my chef actually helped me make them better. So he was like, hey, Ellen, these are not good. You need to change this. And I was like, oh my God, this is my one and only client. I have to make him happy because he's my only freaking client. So he gave me the aprons back and I was like, I will fix these for you. No problem. I'm not going to charge you for any of it. And I took the little money that I made on that order and I put it right back into the aprons to make them better. And some of the changes that we made on the neck strap are things that we still use to this day. So it was like, he was my focus group. He was everything all lumped into one. And, you know, I started it with $300. So it wasn't like I had a lot of stuff with me to get that going, but I did it anyway. So that's what I always tell people. Just start. Stop worrying about it so much.
Where did you learn to trust yourself so much?
My mother always trusted me a lot when I was young, from like very young age. My parents got divorced. And so I was like, you know, I think I should have an extension to your credit card so that I can do the grocery shopping so that when you get home, you can, you know, have food. And she was like, okay. And then we went to the bank when I was, I think I was 15 years old, and I convinced Bank of America to give me a credit card extension of my mother's credit card. So at 15, I had access to all of my mother's money, and it wasn't even a question. It wasn't like, oh my God. And because there was no doubt on her end, there was no doubt on my end. And I thought, well, if she trusts me, then I need to trust myself, and I have to do this right. And so it was a lot of that coming from her that just gave me the, I think, trust factor that I wasn't going to mess it up. And I, you know, I also have a sense of responsibility. If I say I'm going to do something, you sure as hell know that I'm going to do it. So that's another thing that I learned very quickly in business. It's like, shit gets around. Like, if you do a bad job, someone's going to know about it. So you better get out there and put your best foot forward and not say you're going to do something and don't do it. In my case, I definitely did it. And when I messed up, I was the first one to admit that I messed up. And then I was constantly trying to improve my processes and the way that I did it. So that's very important in business as well.
Yeah, of course. So I love that you used your chef, essentially your boss, and he was willing to work with you. And I think that is really important when you are launching, especially a physical product like you were creating, like you invented those aprons.
Totally.
You know?
Yep.
And so you needed to have direct connection with the consumer.
Yeah.
To see exactly how you should create it, you know, how they could use it best. And so I love that you were so tied to that, and you knew that, you saw that, and you're like, this is important. I'm going to do my absolute best to make this, you know, the best product. Did you know you were creating a business though? Did you know I want this to turn into my full-time job, or did you just really want to make aprons?
Well, there was something that happened when I made those aprons that I hadn't quite felt before. And it was just sort of this gut feeling of, oh, wow, this is really awesome. And I love it. Mm-hmm. And I'm enjoying the hell out of this. And on top of it, I get to be creative, but I still get to have my foot in the kitchen. And I had always wanted to have a job, like when I was younger. I always wanted to be to some degree in the culinary world, even if it wasn't a chef in the long run. I knew that I wanted to have my hands in the culinary world. So this sort of world I created for myself was the perfect world, because I got to cook whenever I wanted, but then at the same time, I was also getting to be design oriented, which I also love.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of sense of empowerment whenever you're able to create the world that you want.
Yeah. And it's empowering, and it's going to be very freaking hard, but it is sure as hell not impossible.
So what was the catalyst then that took this side business into a full-time business? So you started making more aprons, you were perfecting it over time, you were probably getting more clients to, you know, to place orders. But what was really the moment where you knew, okay, I have a business and I'm going to quit my full-time job and pursue this?
Well, you know, I kept my jobs as I was a line cook at one restaurant, and I was a line cook at another restaurant, and I was a personal chef for a family. So I kept all three jobs for quite some time into Headley and Bennett, because I didn't want to touch any of the money that was funding the company, because that was it. That was all the money that it had. I was essentially self-funding it with orders. And so I think I quit my final job 2.5 years into Headley and Bennett. So I already had an office and employees, and I was still going to cook as a cook, making $10 an hour up into 2.5 years into Headley and Bennett. Yeah,
what?
That was just me being a maniac, but yeah.
Why? I mean, was that a conscious, like, I still want to work because of,
I think,
was it security, or you just wanted to related to the cooking?
The irony is, like, what kind of security is $10 an hour? But in my mind, I was like, oh my God, this is my, you know, this is my family and this is my connection to the cooking world. And if I lose this, like in my mind, I thought I needed it to protect myself and I needed it to prove myself that I was really legitimate. But on the other side of the coin, I already had an office and I had employees and I had lots and lots of clients and I had been featured in LA Times and all kinds of stuff, yet I wasn't ready to let go of that world yet. And then it came to a point in my life where I was working all day and all night and all weekend and doing the farmer's market Headley and Bennett like booth on Sundays and then from 6 a.m. to 3, and then breaking it down, packing up it all into my Mini Cooper. Imagine trying to shove an Easy Up tent into a Mini Cooper. Those are those tents you use at the farmer's market. I would cram it into the middle of the seat. So I'd like, it was a hatchback. So I'd push all the seats down and cram the Easy Up in, and you couldn't even see out the windows. And I'd race over to Providence, which is the restaurant I worked at, and cook from 3 to midnight. And by the time I was home on Sunday night, it was like, I was dragging myself to bed and I was just like, this is insane. Like, you're going to kill yourself. You need to let go of something. So I finally talked to my chef and he was like, dude, you've got to go. Like, what are you doing? And at this point, I was like, you're right. I do. I need to fly the chicken nest. I have chickens at home, so I always think of chickens. I need to fly the coop and just get out there and be my own woman. So 2.5 years in was when I finally like took that leap, and it was amazing. It was very incredible because I was able to do so much more in the day because I had already crammed in so much into my day while working all these jobs that I just, it was like I suddenly had a whole new life, and it was awesome.
Well, you were also had the ability to focus.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Which you didn't necessarily have before because you were, you know, kind of running around and trying to make two worlds happen.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But it, you know, that's also, that is to say, that isn't to say that somebody shouldn't do that. If that's what you need to do to like support yourself, that's okay too. Like there is no right way to get your business off the ground. There's so many different ways and different avenues, but I always want to make sure that people understand that just because they don't have a bunch of money to start something doesn't mean they can't start it. Like it takes a hell of a lot more grit and persistence, but it's definitely doable, and I did it.
Do you think it takes more grit or more money?
I would say grit, and obviously orders too. In my case, the product that I made was something that people really wanted, and so we had a really high demand, and there were a lot of people that were like, wow, this is incredible. I love what you're doing. You're making a product that no one's ever made before, and you're making it in America, and you're making it faster and better and higher quality, and you're delivering it to me with a smile and a hug, and you're like nice and friendly and all of the other stuff that I offered. And so it was just one of these things where people were like, hell yeah, I want to support you. But you also need to make sure that whatever service it is that you're offering is something that people actually need and that they actually want. Because just because you think that the world needs, you know, a five-wheel bicycle or whatever you would call that doesn't mean that the world needs that. My world needed what I offered, but I think that's an important thing to figure out from the beginning is like actually talk to people and be willing to hear what they have to say about the product that you're making, because for all you know, what you're making isn't needed and there's 20 other, and you know, I see that on Instagram all the time. There's like 8 billion people doing the same exact calligraphy. And I'm just like, holy shit, how are they going to stand out? How are they going to make their product better than others? How are they going to, you know, defeat the competition? And I think those are sincere questions that one as an entrepreneur needs to ask themselves.
Since you did create a new product, have you seen competition rise up in that time?
Oh my God.
And how did you handle that?
Totally. Oh, all over the place. I mean, when I started it, it was very much, it's pretty much me and then these really big companies that made everything in Bangladesh and sold aprons for, you know, $5. Whereas I came in and started selling retail aprons for $80. And people were like, that's insane. What are you talking about? But then on the flip side, the lifetime of that apron was like tenfold the lifetime of their apron. And it was way cooler and it was branded and it was made out of Japanese denim and all the other stuff. So it was like, wow, that's awesome. So then other people were like, oh, that's cool. I'll just go out and buy fabric and do the same thing. That seems fairly easy. But what they didn't realize and what I didn't realize when I started this was that this is a real business. Like, I have a CFO. I have a manufacturing chain that's like hard to even put into a drawing. It's so complicated. Like, we produce thousands of custom aprons weekly, and the supply chain to set something up like that without having major expensive errors is insanity. So it became this very complex infrastructure that I had to build out day by day and piece by piece, and I had no idea that that existed. So when I see other people coming into the picture, I'm like, well, you know, that's cool. And if they make it, well, then kudos to them, because this is really hard work. They just need to not copy exactly what we're doing, and they need to find their own thing. And that I always try and make sure that anything that we do is original to us, and that we are very much staying true to our style and our design, because you can try pretending to be like anybody else all day long and you're just chasing someone else's dream. You have to like find your own, you have to find your own magic sauce and stick to that, because it's way harder to copy other people than to just figure out what you're really, really good at and do that.
Yeah, it might take a little while to find your voice, but when you find it and you find that kind of sweet spot or magic sauce that you said, it's so much easier to actually communicate with the consumer and them see that you're being authentic in your offering.
Exactly. And that isn't to say you can't go out and get inspired and all that kind of stuff, but inspiration and copying are two very different things. Like, taking people's exact styles, you know, we have real lawyers now that will go after people and send them cease and desist. And that's a really real thing. But, you know, I'm still totally inspired by other companies and other things that aren't necessarily in apron land, but are, you know, maybe a famous painter or a designer or a pants maker or whatever. So I'm always keeping my eyes and ears peeled for things that get my wheels turning, because nothing in this world is stagnant. Like, you're either going up or you're going down. So you got to make sure that you're going up and not down.
What are your thoughts about going up quickly versus going up slowly?
I think that there's a really giant, it's sad because it's kind of, and hey, I'm a chubby little girl myself right now, I'm not going to lie, but it's kind of like a chubby girl looking at Vogue magazine and being like, why am I not in there? Why? I feel like that's the way a small business owner feels when they read Inc. or Forbes magazine. You're like this chubby little girl that wants to be a supermodel, and you have your friends that are famous supermodels and are like the owners of these huge companies that are just supposedly killing it. And then it turns out behind the scenes, they've got bulimia and want to like throw themselves out of a window. So I feel like in a way, business is a little bit like that these days, with these insane companies that are like, I became a $400 million company in 2 years. And you're like, how the hell is that even humanly possible? So I'm a big believer in real growth and not inflated growth. And we are a bootstrapped company, which means our growth is definitely not going to be, you know, the equivalent of, let's say, Nasty Gal. But on the flip side, we're not filing for bankruptcy. So I have total admiration for everything that Sofia Moroso did and grew as a company. But at the same time, I don't believe in the way that they grew their business. And I think that you shouldn't necessarily pour more money into something that you don't have if you don't have to. Martha Stewart is on the Apron Squad, and she said to me once, I was in New York with her, and she was like, Ellen, you want to hold on to your business as long as humanly possible and not take on outside investment as long as you can. Like, this is coming from Martha fucking Stewart. I'm just saying.
Straight from Martha.
Straight from the boss.
You said that you don't want to take outside investors, but you also want to make sure that you're still growing. But there's an aspect of sales and growth and profit that you want to keep increasing, but you also want to do it the right way.
Yeah.
And so I know that you've kept your supply chain in the US, and how do you create a culture that is centered around doing things the right way versus doing things the fast right. way.
I think that every business is a different scenario. And I have a lot of friends that have incredible companies they would not have been able to start without outside investment. So I definitely recognize that there's a right time and a right place to take outside investment. In our case, we were able to, you know, suck it up and figure it out on our own. But that is definitely not the case for everyone. More technology heavy companies definitely need sometimes a big upfront investment. And that's a whole other can of worms that we didn't have to deal with. But I think that if you find a happy medium between having a clear understanding of what the hell you're going to do with your money if you did get that money. Like, don't just go out and raise money to raise money. Really, really iron it out, because you can throw money at a problem all day long. But if you don't really figure out how to run a business, no one is going to teach you how to do that unless you decide, I'm going to figure out how to do this and I'm going to get help and I'm going to get experts to teach me about this, that, and the other. But you have to understand what they're doing, because at the end of the day, you're running your company. And so I think due to the scrappiness with which I've run Headley and Bennett, I've forced myself to learn things that I maybe would not have learned if I had had infinite resources.
It also makes you appreciate your team more.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you know exactly what they're doing, because you've probably had to do it yourself.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And I think that it sort of goes back to my mother and, you know, her having gotten divorced when I was young. We were not rich by any means, and we were definitely scrappy, and there were definitely things that we did sort of a little bit less refined than maybe other people. And that empowered me to figure out solutions when other people didn't see solutions. And so when you start to think like that about life, you start to recognize opportunities where other people don't see them. And you're like, oh, well, wait, what if we do it like this and we could just fix it like that? And then you start problem solving in a really awesome way. And a lot of what business is problem solving. It's like managing bullets being flung at your head all day. And making sure that you don't get hit and go down in flames. And sometimes you do, and you have to like pull the bullet out and get up and keep going. So it's like, how do you do that efficiently and well and not go down in flames too hard?
As you've built your company, how have you created a culture of people who work towards the same goal? Like this dream that you had, you have this team of people that are now working towards that same dream. So how have you created a culture to ensure that people are feeling fulfilled?
I always make sure that the people that we have are learning and are being challenged, mm-hmm. legitimately challenged. Like anybody that works on our team has a voice and has my ear, and suggestions are never brushed off. And I think that that's very empowering to them. And I really am truly big on pushing people outside their comfort zones, including myself. I'm constantly pushing myself out of my comfort zones, almost too often, you could say, because that's where I feel like, you know, you're sort of tearing your mental muscles and learning to do things that you didn't know how to do. And it's in those moments where I feel like you grow the most. So if you have an entire team of people that are constantly tearing their mental muscles and finding better ways to do stuff, no one gets complacent and no one just sits back on their laurels and says, oh, this is all figured out. Because when that starts happening, it's like, no, you better be a billion-dollar company. And even then, you have so many competitors that you can't sit on your laurels. Like, you really do have to keep going. So I think that when we hire people, we look for that fire and drive within them. And we also make sure that people have similar goals to ours. I don't let anybody work here that doesn't have something that they're going to get out of their job here at Headley and Bennett. And I'm sort of the, I'm a believer in like, okay, once you've learned everything you need to learn here, you shouldn't work here anymore. Or we need to put you in a different department, or you need to expand this department or create a new area, but like you gotta keep growing, because it's just like, it's good for you as a person, it's good for the business, it's good for everybody.
Like, Yeah, I agree. Because once someone stops growing, they don't perform as well because they're not passionate about it. There's no energy for them or for the company.
Totally. And if you have people that are directly contributing to the growth of a business, that's exciting. You're not just like some cog in the wheel. You're actually like a part of something bigger than you and your life and bigger than the building. It's important and it's very real. And I think that we've gotten amazing opportunities to do really cool collaborations with really cool companies. And it also makes the team realize, wow, like people actually know who we are and we're out there in the world. Like, this is real.
What's been your favorite collaboration with another company?
Oh, that's a great question. Okay, so we did a collaboration with Mario Batali about 2 years ago, which was really amazing because he's obviously an incredible chef and it was sort of a gigantic honor. And a cool thing that we did with it was a portion of the proceeds went to his foundation. So we were able to use Headley and Bennett as, you know, a vessel for good. And I was able to contribute to this great cause. So I loved that. We've also done did a recent collaboration with Gray Mallon, who's an amazing photographer. And we took some of his prints. He does all these photos from the air, like in a helicopter. And so we took one of his prints from a naked beach in, I think it was Barcelona. And so there were all these tiny little naked men on a beach and we had it printed on fabric and we made an amazing apron together that got picked up by Vogue and all these different channels. And it was so rad. What I loved about that was it was two people that have very similar brand styles where we're just like outside the box and colorful, but that you wouldn't expect to have them working together, yet we did. And that, I love it. I love surprising people. And then the latest collaboration we just did, which was amazing, was with The Hundreds, which is kind of like Supreme, a really cool streetwear company. And we made an amazing apron with them. And I loved that because we created a bridge between streetwear and culinary gear. So we're just, you know, we're just like burning down walls saying that wall doesn't exist anymore. We're coming for you.
There are no boundaries.
Hell no.
What has been something that you have learned about yourself in this process of starting a business, growing a company? What's something that you've learned about yourself that has surprised you about Ellen?
I think that I'm incredibly independent, you could say. And I think when I started, it was just me. And I definitely realized that you need people to make your dreams come true. You can't do it on your own. Like, you need a team. You need a team that you can trust. It sounds so, you know, almost stupid, simple, but it's true. And along with that comes training and respect and figuring out how to navigate that and letting go of certain things so that you can focus on more top level shit that needs to be done. And there's certain parts of my job that I love and there's certain parts of my job that I hate. And I realized that as the business grows, it's not just like, I don't just get to do what I love to do, but I have to do what I am responsible for doing as the business owner. And that isn't always the pretty stuff. And that's definitely not the stuff that makes it onto Instagram. That's the P&Ls and all the other stuff that's in the in-between the lines part of running a business. And as the
it's not sexy.
It's very unsexy, but it's very necessary. And it's just part of it. And if you don't want to do that, that's actually okay. You don't have to. You just find a company that you feel like you support and you're going to be a great asset to. And you know what? You need those people. You want people to help build businesses, and that's okay. I think that I don't know. I used to think that maybe everybody could run their own business, but not everybody needs to run their own business. It's not necessary. You need people. You need team members too.
Yeah, I feel like we're in a craze right now of entrepreneurship where everyone wants to start a business and everyone wants to kind of create their own life. And I think there's a misconception that you can't do that working for another company because you can.
Right. Oh, you absolutely can. And like, oh my God, if I had run across a company like Headley and Bennett, like with its philosophy and way of doing business, you better believe I'd be working there and I wouldn't have my company. But eventually, I think it's in my blood just from how I was raised to forge my own path because I was sort of forced to with my parents getting divorced when I was young. But that's not everybody's path, and that's okay. I think don't compare yourself to other people is another big thing that people talk about, but you really do have to apply it. Like, you know, there's all these like girl boss conferences and stuff. And, you know, I have almost 30 employees and I go to these things and I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? But you have to remember, like, every person in every situation is totally different. You don't know what circumstances they had to get them to where they are, or when they started, or all those details that happened behind the curtain.
What has been probably your biggest challenge, though, or your biggest struggle as an entrepreneur and as a CEO of a company?
Definitely, I would say the team, building the team, making sure that the right people are on the team, and recognizing when something is not right, and having the balls and the courage to let that go or to change it. That's very hard, because when you're working with people all day, you sort of get attached to them and maybe become reasonable about certain things. And, you know, there's been people along the journey that I should have held on to, or I should have let go of a lot sooner than I did. And that is, I think, the big difference between a man and a woman running their own company. I think a woman is emotional and about her decisions, but that's not a bad thing. It's just there's a lot more care and love that goes into everything. It's not all transactional. It's like, oh my God, that person is somebody that I love, and what are they going to do, and where are they going to go? Like, those are all the things that run through my head. Whereas, and I don't want to say this about every man, but I would assume that it's a little bit more so like, well, you're not a good fit. And they're like, okay, I'm not a good fit. Off I go on to the next thing. And for me, it's a lot more like, oh my God, I love them. Ah! So that's challenging at times. But at the same time, I feel like that's what gives Hedley and Bennett the like that magic and that specialness that these other apron companies that exist out there don't have. It's like there's a real person, there's a woman behind this company that is saying, I give a shit about you, and I'm going to make this the best damn experience ever, and you're going to have the best apron in the world because of me.
Yeah, I think that you have incredible vision and energy. How do you cultivate this energy that you have? Because you have such a drive and motivation to create the best apron, create the best team. And where does that come from, or what drives you? And then what do you do on your off days when you don't have that?
Yeah, I very much get myself embroiled in really ridiculous activities to stay energized. Like last year, I signed up for a 300-mile bike ride for charity. So it was 3 days, 300 miles. And I also did a triathlon. And this year I'm doing the New York Marathon, or I'll be like, I'm going to do 7 a.m. spinning 3 days in a row this week. So I'll do really intense, I'll sign up for really intense activities to push me again out of my comfort zone and make sure that I go out and do that. That really, really helps, believe it or not. I think that a lot of, you know, what you could call depression and anxiety and stress can be resolved with exercise, sleep, and eating well. And so I make sure that I take a ton of vitamins. I sleep like at least 8 hours a night, and I exercise a whole crap ton. And I try and leave LA, you know, probably like once a month I'll go somewhere just to separate myself from the business and be able to get an external look at what's happening. Because sometimes when your head is in it, in everything all day, you don't see all the details. So I usually get a pretty refreshed look at I come back with a refreshed look on the business. And that helps me a lot. And then as far as just like, how do I keep it going all the time? I think that I'm, you know, people might be listening to this podcast and don't know, are like, wait, what? Aprons? She makes aprons? I don't understand. Like, the aprons are the vessel that Hedley and Bennett uses to do what we do. But like, it's not about the apron. It's about the people that wear the apron. It's about the people that make the apron. It's about the community that we're building around this said apron. And it's an amazing product, and it's beautiful. And I literally can say with confidence that it is the best apron you'll ever wear. because I know how many people it takes to make one of our aprons. Like, it takes almost 20 people to make one of our aprons, between the sourcing and the QC that goes into it and all the different, you know, details and aspects and parts that go into one of our aprons. And it's going to last you forever and ever and ever. And it's amazing and beautiful. But at the end of the day, it's like we actually stand for something. And in a way, that's what really drives me and motivates me. Because if I'm out here and I'm succeeding, and let's say two women see that I succeeded and that gives them motivation to get out there and succeed, I just helped two women. And that is exciting to me. It's the inspiration to others that it can be done, regardless of your circumstances, regardless of how much money you have, regardless of if your parents got divorced or if you broke your leg or don't have a leg. Like, who gives a shit? You can do it.
I want to put you in my pocket and take you over with me, because you were just like this sunshine, bright, like, ray of light. I just love your energy. And I'm so happy that you came on the show and very, very thankful for your time. I just have one more question for you. But before I ask it, I would love for you to share with the audience where they can find you online, you and Hedley and Bennett.
So you can follow all of my adventures on Ellen.
And with your pig.
Yes. We have a 100-pound pig that lives at home with us and 6 chickens. So if you'd like to see the chicken and the pig, you can follow me at Ellen the Apron Lady on Instagram, or Hedley and Bennett, Hedley and Bennett, on Instagram as well. Those are like our favorite channels. And then we also have an amazing set of newsletters that goes out every month that are super fun and awesome. And if you're ever in LA, you can come visit our 15,000 square foot apron factory, where we have a zip line and a treehouse, and our customer service team works out of a treehouse, and we have a slide and swings and an entire coffee bar, and everybody gets McConnell's ice cream when they come in for a tour. So it's very Willy Wonka like, and you can come and visit here and check it out as well.
Oh, girl, I'm taking you up on that. Seriously. I'm actually coming to LA for the Yellow Conference.
Oh, cool. Have you ever heard of that conference? Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to the Yellow Conference. I think it's in August. So I literally will, like, take a half day and I'll come.
Oh, yes.
And I'll use your zip
line. Amazing. I love it.
I would love to come to your factory. That would be so much fun. Okay, so my last question for you is, what does the laptop lifestyle mean to you?
I think it is about taking your life and really owning the fact that you're driving the car. And that means you got to drive through the rainstorms too. You can't just drive through the pretty lands of green grass. Like, there's going to be rainstorms and there's going to be shitty bumps in the road, and you have to ride through those too. But that's the laptop lifestyle for me, for real. Like, it's just, this is your life and you're driving it, and this is the avenue that you're going to take. And you're going to do it and just commit to it. Don't give up when you hit a bump in the road, because it's just a part of the road.